Well, hello there, HW here. Thank you so much for listening to episode 5 of the Tone Junkie podcast. Just one topic today. One topic. I want to talk about why the Kemper is better than a tube amp. That's right. Let's do it. So why does the Kemper sound better than a tube amp? Let's get into it. First of all, let me say some of the reasons I'm going to give are applicable to some other digital units. You might feel like some other digital units do this stuff as well. And I'm going to say to that, I have tried the Helix, the Axe FX, and the Kemper. And if you like all of those units, great. I personally think they're all cool, but the Kemper at its best, meaning Tone Junkie stuff, Michael Britt stuff, et cetera, et cetera. The Kemper at its best, to me, is better than I was able to get out of any of those other units. And it was better than I heard from those other units. That's just my opinion. I think the Kemper sounds better. Now, if I listen to a mix, can I tell if it's a Kemper, a Helix, an Axe FX? No, they all sound good. In a blind test with someone playing the guitar on YouTube, could I tell with 100% accuracy? No. No, not with 100% accuracy. Although I will just point out that when Bradford Mitchell, a guy on Kemper P&W on Facebook, tried to trick us all by playing the Helix Litigator patch and asking which Kemper profile it was, I knew it was a Helix. But also, I just suspected someone was about to do that too. So my spider senses were up. Anyway, why is the Kemper better than a tube amp? Okay, I'm going to make this statement. It's better than a tube amp, point number one, out of three reasons that I'll give you why it's better than a tube amp. Reason number one, the Kemper sounds better than a tube amp. No. Turn off the pod. Unsubscribe. How dare HW say that? I'm not listening anymore. Well, I'm sorry if you feel that way. I'm telling you my opinion. The Kemper sounds better than a tube amp. You stop it, HW. HW, are you just being provocative to get more listeners? No, I don't mind more listeners, but I'm not being provocative to get more listeners. HW, do you really mean that? I do. I really mean that. HW, have you recently hit your head and you're confused? No, I'm not confused. I do know what I'm saying. I believe the Kemper sounds better than a tube amp. HW, I don't know what to say. I am so upset. You've crossed the line. These are just lies. Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but let me explain. My first experience with a Kemper was when I was starting to play at my current church. I had just moved from San Francisco to Nashville, and I had been filling in with some people I had met around Nashville at churches, with some buddies, you know, meeting people, and they needed a guitar player occasionally, and so that's what I was doing. But I really wanted to play at my local church where I was going on the weekends. And so I said, okay, I'm going to ask if I can play. So I did, and I met a lot of really cool people, but it took a little while before before they let me play, you know? But so the first week I play, I show up and I play with this guy named Sean. Now I bring in my $2,000 Surbell amplifier and my $2,000 Sur Strat. And I brought in my pedal board with, the Strifecta, three big Strymon pedals and the King of Tone and the Cali 76 and something else, about $2,000 worth of gear on that board. So I just come in and I plop down $6,000 in guitar gear. All right, guys, ready to play. Let's go. And I put the mic in front, and I said, all right, let's do it. And then the other guitar player, he played his guitar for a moment, and I thought they started a track. I thought they had queued the track up, and we were going to play with tracks or something. And because it was like kind of an ambient thing he started doing. It sounded brighter than my guitar, sounded fuller than my guitar. It sounded incredible. It sounded like a produced, mastered record. And I Well, I sounded like an SM57. Because isn't that what we all do? I have played at bars, churches, music festivals. I've been hired to play at events, weddings, and corporate events and stuff. And everywhere I've gone, it doesn't matter the gear I bring, I always get handed an SM57. Occasionally, I'm handed like a Sennheiser, like a 906, but a dynamic microphone. There's nothing wrong with dynamic microphones. I use them. I use them to make all the Tone Junkie profiles. But it's not how we record the guitar when we're looking for the best tone. See, a lot of people will tell you that all of this depends on what you're optimizing for. Well, you know, you like the Kemper because it's good enough and because it's small. I get it. You don't want to carry a bunch of stuff. I hear people say that. Well, I put the Helix on my back and it's just, you know, it's so light. But no, I'm a tone junkie. I'm willing to carry in whatever gear is required for the best tone. I really am. I used to carry in a 412. I'm sorry. Yeah, I used to carry in a 412, like a half stack. For church, I used to play a Marshall Silver Jubilee half stack in church. They thought I was nuts. I said, no, this is my sound, y'all. I used to carry in those a big 1971 Fender Bandmaster with the original cab. I said, no, this is what I play, guys. Okay, they put up with me. They let me do it. I used to carry my big Orange AD30 combo, and we played all over with this thing, and me and the other guitar player had orange AD30 combos, matching black SGs and orange combos, and that thing was 150 pounds, it must have been. It was so heavy. You could barely lift it. That thing was so heavy. I'm willing to mess up the back seat of my car. I'm willing to hurt my back. I even one time, we were playing at the Makeout Room in San Francisco. If you don't know the Makeout Room in San Francisco, it's a bar. I think it's still there. But it's like New Year's Eve, like kind of like every night. And then, you know, you kiss people on New Year's Eve. So it's called the Makeout Room. And they have a giant moose head coming out of the wall and people throw bras on it, like brassieres, you know. It's a wild place. Sold out the Makeout Room one time. And sold out Makeout Room, and I'm carrying all this gear, and I'm lifting my amp, and I'm trying to hop up on the stage while I'm lifting this thing, right? If I'd been an older man at the time, I probably would have broken my back. I tore my pants. I tore the crotch of my pants. Dude, I tore my pants, and then I got up on stage and played the whole set. And my pants were the only thing that ripped that night because the tone was ripping. Oh, yeah. I'm a tone junkie. I don't care about convenience. It's nice, but I don't care about convenience. I'm after tone. And I can't help but notice that whenever you talk about digital gear and tube amps, people always say, well, you lose the punchiness of this, you lose this and all these things, right? And yet, I actually don't think tube amps perform as well in the real world when you're out there. When you're out there playing and you say, well, I'm optimizing for tone, so I drag this thing in. See, then what happens is they give you an SM57, and then you sound like the guitar amp through the SM57. And so the question is not, does the Kemper sound better than a tube amp? In the sense of I can sit in my bedroom and compare them, A-B them. In the sense of let me mic them up the same way and then compare, does the profile sound exactly like a tube amp? No. The question becomes, does a profile that HW makes, does a profile that Michael Britt makes, does a profile that Sela Sounds makes, using a Royer 121 and or a Fathead 57, I'm sorry, a Cascade Fathead 2, or with an SM57 into some preamps mixed together, does that profile, mic'd and captured the way I would capture a guitar for a recording, does that sound better than the amp dragged into a bar with a 57 placed on it, hoping for the best, not knowing what's going on at that channel at the board? See, with the Kemper, you can ask the guy, can you set it flat, please? Hey, this is a different piece of gear. You might want to start flat and then make whatever adjustments you feel necessary from there. It sounds better. How can I make that statement? It sounds better because the purpose is to be heard. The function of music is to be heard, is to be listened to, is to be sung along with, is to be experienced, is to evoke emotion, is to dance. What matters is what people are hearing. You matter. It matters what you hear. But again, what sounds better? The Surabella, mic'd up with a Cascade Fathead 2 and a 57 through two preamps, and I can get all the shades I want. I can turn that amp up or down with the click of a foot switch and get a captured version of that, a profile. That does not sound 100% like it, but I would make the argument that a profile captured in that scenario sounds better than that same amp just brought with an SM57 stuck in front of it, hoping that the volunteer sound guy in a lot of cases isn't going to mess with the... It remembers that... See, here's what happens. On a Wednesday night, they use that channel at the board for something else. And then Sunday morning, it's back to being a guitar channel, and who knows what they did to it. And who knows what the volunteer guy is even going to double check. No, he'll tell you two services into the weekend, two out of three services. He'll tell you two services in, your guitar sounds kind of muffled. It sounds better than a tube amp. I rest my case. That's point one. All right, reason number two, the Kemper is better than a tube amp. Exhibit B, tube amps are just too loud. Oh, HW, what are you, 60? What, did you just get your AARP card in the mail? I mean, come on, they're too loud. Rock and roll, man. No, I like rock and roll as much as the next person, but let's be practical for a minute. Tube amps are still made the same way with the same basic design that they've been made since the 1950s. And in the 1950s, they were trying to solve a particular problem. Let's look at one amp that was very influential in early amplifier design and amplifier look, and really an amplifier that had a really big part in shaping what we all think of as how amplifiers should look today. I'm talking about the original Tweed Fender Bassman combo. Now, if you look back at really old recordings, you're going to notice that at the time, microphones were used to pick up the sound of a room. They weren't used to really closely, they were in some cases, but really, you'd see bluegrass bands, they'd all stand a distance from the microphone, and they'd all play. And then when it was time for a solo, someone would approach the microphone, get closer, to get louder. And bluegrass bands still do this today. That's the old bluegrass style. That makes a lot of sense when you think of how expensive microphones were, how difficult it was to mic a room with the technology available. And so if you look at these really old recordings, you notice the singers sing into microphones, and sometimes there's microphones to pick up acoustic instruments. But instruments like the bass were really big. The stand-up bass is really large because they're not miking it. It's meant to be amplified. And maybe there's a room mic set back to just pick up the sound of the room. But that amplifier built into the bass, which is the bass, the body of the stand-up bass, its job is to be heard by the listener. See, the voice, we know the human voice has a limitation, right? It can only be as loud as it is. So the drums have a limitation. They're as loud as they are. So we've got to get other instruments to work around it. So we need this huge body on this bass. We need the acoustic guitar and the banjo. That's why if you look at acoustic guitars, by the way, the Dreadnought was invented to compete in jazz bands and in orchestras to be louder, because the original parlor guitars were what people were playing, but they weren't loud enough. So if you look at the OM style from Martin, the acoustic guitars from Martin, you see the O style guitars getting bigger. They literally were just making parlor guitars with larger and larger bodies until someone said, let's make it deeper and let's really cut down on the contours of the body. And the Dreadnought was born. The Dreadnought was there to compete with the banjo, to compete with the trumpets in an orchestra pit. The Dreadnought was there to compete in a big band, jazz band, when you've got to have some sound getting thrown out there. The clack of the strings gets thrown out there because you're competing with a horn section. So what was the point of the original Bassman, the Tweed Bassman amplifier? Well, they put 410 speakers in it because 10s had a really tight bass, and it was for the bass guitar, the electrified bass guitar. Even really before that, it was actually for the electric guitar so that someone could play the bass part on the electric guitar. And it wasn't mic'd, it was used to throw the sound out so the audience could hear it. So if you think of sound engineering in a live space in the 1950s when the tube amp was designed, what you're dealing with is an engineer in the front of the room saying, okay, toss all your sound out here, and I'm going to try to get the vocals and some mic'd instruments and the room level higher. That is not how we approach professional sound today. That is how we would do like an amateur sound, like a high school talent competition. Like, that's not what we think of as professional sound engineering today. Those are not the tactics we use. And yet the tube amplifier hasn't changed. I want to submit this thought to you for a moment, and I want you to really hear me on this. The tube amplifier in 2018 does not even have a volume control. HW, what are you talking about? Did you hit your head again? Are you confused? The tube amplifier has volume controls. It has a volume control, has master volume controls, has all sorts of volume controls. No, it doesn't. It doesn't have a master volume. It doesn't have an overall volume. It has something called a master volume. They call it that. But really, it's a gain control for different sections of the amplifier. Sometimes on amps, it's labeled volume and it's labeled gain. Other times, you'll just see something in the power section that's labeled master. But that master is just driving tubes with much higher headroom. Those power tubes, it doesn't matter what it is, KT66s, 6L6s, whatever, they're just higher headroom tubes. They do the same thing. They compress, they break up. It's not a master. Those are all gain controls. They do affect the loudness. They do affect the perceived volume, but those are not volumes. Tube amps do not get louder in a way that treats the EQ independently from its volume. They get louder and the EQ changes. I'm saying this poorly. There's not some sort of a linear master volume that comes after all of the gain stages and everything. It's not how a tube amp works, and it's not even how speakers work. Speakers don't do that. And yet, we use speakers and everything, and we trust speakers to give us a clear, easy EQ across the board, and they do. And fun fact, the human ear doesn't even hear linear. Okay, but anyway, Fletcher Munson curve. Go Google that. Anyway, but jumping back, what we do on purpose with guitar amplifiers is we use low wattage speakers because we don't want them to accurately produce our sound. We want them to affect our sound. We want speaker compression. We want speaker breakup. We want those things. I love what every stage of a tube amplifier does to the sound of guitar. I love talking about the tubes I like in V1. I love talking about the tubes I like in the phase inverter, and we're going to get into that next. I love what a power amp does. I love bridging two channels on a tube amplifier so that I'm now getting more signal to the phase inverter and getting all that breakup that people love when you jumper the channels of a JTM45 or a Plexi or a Bassman. But if you look at that original design, that Fender Tweed Bassman design, and you consider this is a design that Jim Marshall used to make his JTM45, which gave birth to all of that British sound. It's not ridiculous to point out they don't have a master volume. And in today's application, when we're trying to actually get accurate and good usable sound to the listener, a well-mixed, controlled sound to the listener in a live environment. Specifically, because on a record, you can do whatever you want, right? But recording is not the primary use of these amplifiers. Every time you record a record, you then go play it live. You play it live 100 times for every one time you do it in the studio, probably way more than that. but they don't have a master volume and they're too loud. And we get used to this thing. We all sit in these spaces. Think about the real world application here for a minute. We all sit in a bedroom. We all sit in some sort of a room. We don't all play in a big studio Carnegie Hall all the time. We bring amps home. We play them in our rooms. We probably live in normal middle-class homes, a lot of us, or in apartments, or we live in really big houses even. Maybe you do have a lot of space. But there's a point at which see, everything with a tube amp is louder. It's got to be louder to be better. We got to get the tubes cooking. And we reach this certain point where we're pointing the amplifiers down at our ankles. We're sitting too close to them. We're not even hearing the direct sound of the speaker for a lot of frequencies. We're letting the bass go over our head, and then we turn it up so loud that it starts to break up, which actually isn't even that loud if you sit there and feel it. It's not that loud. But at the point you get an amp loud enough that you get just a tiny bit of breakup in a small room, there's a point at which you can hear it. I don't know if you can hear it, but I can hear it. Audio engineers can hear it. People who are paying attention can hear it. It's the point at which you notice, in the space I'm in, this thing is so loud, I'm no longer hearing it. I can identify the moment that I begin to hear as much or more reflections off of the walls and in that room than I am hearing it from that sound source. And if you think about that for a minute, what is that worth? That's nice for you, the player in the room, but that's not good for reproducing the tones that you hear when you're in a larger space. It's not good for reproducing the tones you hear when you've mic'd the guitar amp. It's not good for reproducing tones that you're going to get to the audience. You yourself are applying the giant filter that is the physical space you're in when you're experiencing that tube amp, and you are not getting the same results that you will get in other places. The Kemper doesn't have this challenge because we've controlled more variables. We've now mic'd it, we've brought it through preamps, and we've given a direct sound to us. Now, can you turn the Kemper up through any sort of physical speaker, monitors, whatever, a cab, and get that same effect? Yes, you can do that. But the problem is the tube amplifier requires decibels to be louder. And that increase in decibels actually has a far greater negative effect on the sound you are hearing because you are in a room not designed for it than the positive effects you are getting by having some of that breakup. Let me say that again. You are experiencing more negative effects in terms of sound by allowing the tube amp to be too loud in the room with you because you're getting all of these reflections. You're getting a more negative effect than the benefit you are receiving from hearing that amp louder with some tubes cooking. Because you are hearing it through such a powerful filter, such a level of distortion from the reflections all over that room, from the bass being thrown all around that room. And that's what's reverberating. See, the highs will get soaked up faster than the bass. Even if you're in a small room that has hard surfaces everywhere, the highs are going to reflect, but those basses are going to reverberate. They really are. Even your sheetrock is going to do a better job absorbing those higher frequencies and the bass coming back at you. That's why you need to treat a room with bass traps and all these things if you want to mix in it. But we don't do that. We don't do that when we sit around practicing. Maybe you're a guy who has a studio. Maybe you're also an audio engineer and you do this stuff, but I guarantee you that if you're one of those guys, if you have a studio, you put up the amp separate from you because you value your hearing. I can't tell you how many times I play with people. I notice this especially with older players. They favor a very bright tone. This one guy I used to play with, specifically, his name was Phil, and he had a Strat, a late 70s Strat. And if you know anything about his guitars, they're very strident and loud and everything on the bridge position. And he would play that thing, and the sound engineer and myself would just be, just hurting, listening to the sound of that Strat. But he thought it sounded great. The guy couldn't hear high end like I could. Not like I could, like a normal person could. I noticed I had a couple other buddies, a little older buddies, and they hadn't protected their hearing over the years. See, everything with a tube amp is about louder. You got to get louder, louder, louder. And what happens is you start to lose, you start to damage your ears. I'm very protective of my ears. I go out sometimes and we go down to Broadway Street on Nashville where there's all these honky-tonks. And whenever people come out to visit me in Nashville, I always go, you got to experience this. This is what Nashville's about. And we go down there. But if it's too loud, I'll go stand outside. I put my earphones in. I put my earplugs in and just go, hey, I don't want to be in here. I don't want to stand where you are. I'm sorry. You only get one set of ears. You got to protect that. I want to be able to hear frequencies. I don't want to lose my ability to hear frequencies. It's this whole Yanni Laurel thing, right? We're hearing different things because in the high end and the low end, we're hearing different things. We're also on different devices because I've heard Yanni and Laurel on different devices because of what those speakers in the devices are reproducing. The speakers in those devices are producing sometimes higher frequencies, lower frequencies. They're cutting stuff out. And so I'm not hearing the same thing everywhere. Tube amps are just too loud. They don't have master volumes. Everyone says, oh no, you got to really turn it up to get cooking. But that's not practical for life. It's not practical because design is not practical. I hope you are satisfied with my reason number two. Maybe you don't agree. But I love the way tube amps sound. I want to reiterate that. I love tube amps. I have many. I play them. But I don't sit in my room and turn them really loud and distort my perception with all of this bass jumping around the room and then wonder why when I show up live it doesn't sound that way. Or wonder why when I put mics on it sounds nothing like it did at home. That's reason number two. They don't have master volumes and they're too freaking loud. Okay, exhibit C, reason number three, Kempers are better than tube amps. Reason number three, exhibit C, that Kempers are better than tube amps. Before we get into this, let's talk about speakers and tubes for a minute, and I want to just talk about this. I haven't talked about speakers a ton, but in general, my favorite speakers, the ones I would probably take over anything most of the time, is a particular Scumbag speaker. It's the M75 Scumbag speaker. Now, the M75 is really just Scumbag's version of like a Creamback, a Celestian Creamback. And if you know about the Creambacks, the Celestian Creamback is just a higher wattage version of a Greenback. See, the Greenback's only 25 watts. So you can't put one of them in like a 30-watt amp. You can't put one of those in an AC30. So the Creamback is meant to handle it but still have a lot of that Greenback tone. I love blues. I love blues in a Vox. I love blues in like boutique amps a lot too. I always liked the Celestian Blue and the G12H30 combo. That's the H30, the Heritage H30 70th anniversary speaker that you see a lot. And then you see the, originally the H30 was a type of Greenback. It was a different type. Anyway, that with a blue, I think is a beautiful combination, but I love blues. But at the end of the day, I will take a Creamback, a higher wattage sort of Greenback style speaker any day of the week. I think it rolls off the top end just beautifully. You can still get chime out of it, but it doesn't get harsh. It's not too pronounced in the upper mids. It has a nice mid-range though, kind of a lower mid-range, and it's not too big in the bass, and I don't think the guitar needs to be too big in the bass. I also, you know, V30s work. I think V30s work really well, surprisingly, in like Fender style circuits. You'll see this sometimes, but people don't talk about it that much. I think a deluxe reverb with a V30 speaker, with a Celestian Vintage 30 speaker, actually works really well together. That's a combo you might not think of initially, but somehow it just works together that there's some mid-range in that speaker that really pairs nicely with the Scoot Black Face tone. Okay, enough about speakers. Speakers are really powerful to change the sound of a tube amp. I want to talk about tubes. Tubes, and getting to Exhibit C here, tubes in amps make such a big difference. And I did some experimenting a couple years ago, and I actually have a box full of NOS tubes, a bunch of them. And I've kind of settled into what I prefer in different tubes and NOS tubes, what I think is worth the money. But my first time I was experimenting with NOS tubes, that's new old stock tubes, so old tubes from the 60s and stuff, is I had an Orange AD30 combo, and I had taken it apart. I had opened it up, and I was trying a solid-state rectifier in there, different rectifier tubes. I was trying different EL84s, trying to get different stuff out of it. I remember at one point I put a solid-state rectifier in there, and I was getting a tighter sound, and I liked that. But what I really wanted to do was get more cleans out of that amp. So I had put a Celestion Blue and a G12H30 in that combo. And that gave me more of a boutique, voxy, chimey voice on the clean channel. But I still had enough mid-range and grindiness on channel 2 that I wasn't missing it. It still felt like a British rock amp. So what I learned was, and this is, I have since tried this on a 70s Bandmaster, I tried this on a JTM-45, and just other amps I've had over the years. In general, when you're talking about replacing tubes in an amp for tone, I noticed about 85% of the difference in tone came from that V1 tube. If you're going to go buy an expensive NOS tube, put all your money into the V1 spot, that first tube in the circuit. That first tube is going to be closest to the input of the amp, whichever falls on that side. When you look at the back of the amp, which side is the input on, closest 12AX7, closest preamp tube is going to be the one I would suggest. Put all your money there and then just get some JJs for the rest of them, some modern production stuff for the rest. Because what I found was the sound would change dramatically when you put a certain tube in V1. In V2 and 3, it made just a little bit of difference, but V1 was really shaping the sound. And so my absolute favorite for adding headroom, and I loved this clean, it was punchy and clear, it was beautiful, Amprex Bugle Boy. They're so expensive, like over $300 now. And I had one for a while, and it was beautiful. I don't even have it anymore. And then after that, in channel 2, I noticed I loved Mullards and Bramars. My favorite tube, though, was a tube that was made in the Mullard factory under the name Bramar, B-R-I-M-A-R, and it's the Bramar CV4004. This is really geeky stuff right now, but we're getting to the point. The Bramar CV4004, oh, it just broke up in such a beautifully musical way. It was grindy and British, and it was mid-rangey. It was just so beautiful. I loved it. Loved it. Loved that tube. I probably have 8 of them right now, and I'm really happy. Some of them are still in the original packaging, never opened, and there's about 2 that I use sometimes in amplifiers. So whenever I'm creating Kemper profiles, I will use NOS tubes in a lot of the circuits. Not all of them, but sometimes I'll listen to an amp and go, let me just try some old tubes and see if it gets better. It always gets better. But then I started experimenting with different tubes. The next tube, after the V1 spot where I think it makes the most difference, I would look at the phase inverter. Because when you think of an amp like a JTM-45, like a Bassman, like a Plexi, anything that has 2 channels on the front, that's a normal and a bright, or like a normal or vibrato, any amp that you can jumper those 2 together, the phase inverter becomes a very important tube. And here's why. When you plug into just the bright side of a Plexi or the normal side of a Plexi, you're going through that channel and it goes from the preamp, you go into the input, goes through the preamp tubes and the circuitry, then it hits the phase inverter, okay? It inverts the phase and then it sends it into the power amp. Okay, what's important to note here is that when you plug into both channels, you've now basically doubled the amount of signal going to the phase inverter. Here's why. You go into one channel and then you come out of that same channel and into the second. Now, out of that one channel and into the second, you actually get a little less signal going into that second one. But once both of those signals going into the normal channel, bright channel, hit the 12AX7, they're both being amplified. So if you got 2 tubes up there, you're now going from 2 tubes amplifying into the phase inverter to 4. And you'll immediately notice that if you set the clean channel of a Plexi at 2 on the bright channel and on the normal channel, you'll immediately notice if you jump them together, more gain. And that gain is happening at the phase inverter. You're slamming it with like double the signal, probably a little less than double the signal, but almost double the signal. You're just slamming it. And that phase inverter breakup, that's the sound of a Marshall Plexi. That's the sound of that jumper JTM-45, of that jumpered Bassman. That's a sound we all know and love. That's not, the Plexi didn't magically get more gain in the preamp. It's getting more gain from the phase inverter when you jumper those together, because you've got 2 preamp circuits now feeding 1 phase inverter rather than 1 preamp circuit. So that's how you get more gain out of those amps. Now, what I found was that actually you lose clarity, you lose definition, and it could get too wild if I use that Bramar, my favorite V1 tube, that one that I love to break up. It got too wild there. And actually, I felt like the Amprex Bugle Boy kept it too clean. It like got loud and just kind of a little strident. What I really liked was this Jan Phillips tube, this Joint Army Navy tube. That's what JAN stands for, Joint Army Navy. See, the Army and the Navy got together and they looked for a contractor to build a tube to their specifications so that they could have a very tight tolerance on a 12AX7 tube. They actually had, they needed a bunch of tubes. So there's a bunch of Jan Phillips tubes out there. But I was using the Jan Phillips 12AX7, and the Army and Navy got together and said, we need this so we can calibrate all of our equipment to a certain spec of 12AX7 tube. So we said, okay, well, that sounds good. Let me try that out. So I try that out, and I realized, okay, this is nice. I like this in the phase inverter. And I had heard people say it's like a poor man's Amprex Bugle Boy. And I understand why they say that. If you couldn't get your hands on an Amprex Bugle Boy, you might try these Jan Phillips 12AX7s, because they are also clear and punchy and they're really nice. But I thought they were a great balance. They weren't quite as clean sounding with more headroom, but they were clear sounding. I thought they work beautifully in the phase inverter. That is still today my favorite phase inverter tube. Love that phase inverter tube. It just makes the amp seem alive and full while the Bremar is breaking up. And it still had some crunchiness in it that was just good. It's a perfect phase inverter tube, in my opinion. If I got a Plexi JTM45, I'm putting a Jan Phillips 12AX7 in there. Now, I want to pause for a moment, and I want you to listen to what I'm saying right now. I want you to pause, and where are you? Are you walking your dog? Are you listening on headphones? Are you in the car driving? You're listening to a madman ramble on about NOS tubes that go for hundreds of dollars on eBay. Little pieces of glass, little tiny light bulbs. You're listening to me talk absolute geekery about tubes. Amprex Bugle Boys, can't even get them anymore. Oh, and the one with the Bremar CV4004, but Jan Phillips tube. This is the voodoo and the black hole, the rabbit hole that is tube amps. Do you see this? You're listening to an addict here, a junkie. I call myself a tone junkie for a reason, because these are not the musings of a normal person. This is someone who has spent way, way too much time and money trying to figure this stuff out, experimenting with tubes, going on eBay and researching. Oh, have you heard that this little known, the EL84 Rorins from the Ukraine? Rorins, yes. Don't confuse them with the Romanian Rorins. No, those aren't the EL84s you want. You want the Ukrainian Rorin Company EL84. This isn't normal. This probably isn't even healthy. Can you imagine how good I could be at something if I put my time towards something that, you know, made some money, instead of tubes, speakers? This is my last point. This is the type of voodoo and like kind of atmosphere around tube amps. No one can really explain why. Why is it that modern production tubes don't sound as good as old ones? No one really knows. How come we can't produce harmonics in a tube? Well, Alexander Dumble says the fragile harmonics that can exist in a crystal lattice in a vacuum tube just can't exist in a crystal lattice, and so they're squeezed and squashed out. What are we? Nobody knows what that means. He might as well have just put a spell on you. We worship at this sort of altar of vintage, hard to find, rare, this and that. And I think a lot of it is just complete BS. I really do. I think you'd be hard pressed to find better examples, if you studied it, of the power of suggestion than in the guitar world. I think you'd be really hard to find better examples of just circular knowledge and speak. Well, someone said these were the best 12AX7. Why? Well, because they heard this guy said it. Well, who said it to that guy? Well, this guy said it. Well, who said it there? Well, it's just known. That's just what we do. Here, listen to a podcast of a guy who just rambled on about tubes and speakers. And that is the thing I don't miss about tube amps. I still am into it. I still have a box of them. I still dabble in it. There is some enjoyment I get out of it. But I love that my Kemper can just sound like my AC30 and it sounds like my Bella, and I don't worry about it. And I don't worry, are the tubes failing? Are they going out? Why does it sound funny? Does it sound different than it did a week ago? I don't know. Consistency. Because tube amps are freaking crazy. That's reason number three. Because tube amps are crazy. NOS tubes, speakers, point to point, hand wire. What kind of caps are in there? Like what? What? No, you got to do this. You got to clip the bright cap. You got to do all this stuff. Ugh. What happened to playing the guitar? I'm HW. That's why I believe the Kemper is better than a tube amp. Now, I love tube amps. I think of it like this. Tube amps are great. Like they're my girlfriend. They were my girlfriend. I'd rather marry the Kemper. You know, you're gonna have great times, and you probably got into some trouble with your girlfriend, you know, in Belize one summer, and that was crazy, and oh my gosh, like you only live once. But you know, at the end of the day, you want certain things out of life. And there's a certain volatility, and there's a certain beauty to be young and dumb and just, but you know, there's a practicality to life sometimes. As I get older, I appreciate. You know, I have a more sobering view. No, this is what's important to me. This is what I want. This is really what I enjoy. And I don't regret my past experiences with tube amps. I don't regret that I spent way too much time on eBay and money and everything getting into all this. I don't regret that. I don't regret that I dealt with attenuators for years and all these things. Because it all led to this place. It all led to this podcast, where hopefully I have convinced you that the Kemper is, in fact, better than a tube amp. I've been HW. Thank you so much for listening to episode 5 of the Tone Junkie podcast. Thank you so much for the support. I'll see you really soon. Next episode, we're going to talk about game theory and why King of Tone prices are getting so high. Really going to be an interesting thought. You're going to learn a lot, and you're going to love it. Game theory and why the KOT is so hot and going up in price right now. HW out.